A new poll reveals an old story. Jacksonville voters say they want improvements across this city. They just don't want to pay for them. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, where you, the voters, stand out there on everything from the gas tax to the next mayor's race and a whole lot more. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, if you've ever wondered if you're filling up that recycle bin with the wrong stuff, we have just the book for you as we speak with the author of Can I Recycle This? First, though, here's your COVID update for Tuesday. The state says the number of new cases of COVID increased overnight by just 1,976. That is the lowest count in a month. Good news. However, there were 58 additional deaths overnight. The death toll does climb every single day. So if you haven't received your vaccine yet, go get it, please. Well, city leaders are likely to approve an increase in the local gas tax to pay for some much-needed infrastructure projects across the city. However, a new poll says most voters don't like the idea of more expensive gas. And we've got some other interesting results to share this morning as well in these numbers on everything about how you feel about renaming local schools across Duval County to who you might like to vote for in a couple of years for Jacksonville mayor. Mike Bender runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, and he joins us now with some new poll results. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me this morning.
It's always great to have you. And give us a call, everyone, as we talk about your views on the gas tax and more. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Well, nobody likes a tax increase, Mike, so I guess it's not surprising that you found in your poll that the majority of Duval County residents are not liking the idea of more expensive gas. What did your numbers show?
Yeah, no, 58 to 42 oppose it, and in that, 40% of those were strongly opposed. So there is definitely a base of strong opposition here. The one thing I will say about these numbers and perspective, right? Last week we were in the field for this, and there was a lot of talk nationally about pipeline shutdowns, and there were people filling up bags with gasoline,
yeah, sure,
setting their cars on fire. So I'm not entirely sure this is the best time to be out there talking about that, but that could be contributing to some of this as well.
It really could. That's such an important point. And here's the rub. Most voters, you say nearly 60%, are opposing the gas tax, but at the same time, they approve septic tank phase-out projects in Duval County. But that's what the gas tax is supposed to pay for.
Well, I mean, technically, no. The gas tax isn't paying for that. The gas tax is freeing up money.
Freeing up money. Yeah, indirectly, it would pay for that. Thank you, yes.
Indirectly, yeah.
But it shows the disconnect voters have, is what I was getting at.
It can and it does, right? But just because I'm in favor of septic, now, if you're to have this money appear, I'd like it to go towards septic tanks is one thing. If I'd still rather not have that money, but if it's going to be there, I'd rather have it go towards septic. That's a way to look at these results as well.
Okay. You also asked voters about the Skyway and the Emerald Trail, two projects that could theoretically be funded by a 6 cent a gallon increase in the gas tax. Let's talk about those results.
And I think the Skyway one is the most interesting one. We wanted to work with proposals that were actually out there, because you could ask somebody how much you want to put toward the Skyway, and it could go from a cent to $1 billion. And there's really, we wanted to anchor these questions around real concrete proposals. So we used the $379 million estimate from the original plan, and then we also included $229, which would include some of that money toward the Emerald Trail. And then there was another potential amendment that would drop down to 190. So we used all three of those, and then we did a less than or more than, and then we also added a none option. 34% of the people said not a penny should go to the Skyway. And 87% said less than that original $379 million proposal. So if you're looking for reasons for potential opposition when you say, oh, voters don't like taxes, but they like benefits. Well, they don't like this benefit, or at least they don't like money going toward this benefit. So I think that's something to keep in mind as well. The Emerald Trail fared better, mm-hmm, in that more than half, 54%, were supportive of spending at least the $150 million that were proposed for it.
Okay, so it will be interesting to see how our council members digest your numbers as they decide on how to allocate these funds.
Right, and I think the other thing to always have in the back of your head is who the members are, how they're voting, and what parties they represent. Because if you kind of peek under the hood a little bit, 58% of Republicans are strongly opposed to the gas tax. That's a big number, right? And when you add in the somewhat opposed, you're up to 74%. So the overwhelming majority of Republicans in our survey are opposed to this gas tax increase. And as we all know, the majority of members on city council are Republicans.
This is also a function of the fact that there's no political will to raise revenue another way. Right. You know, for example,
there's a bunch of ways you could just raise the millage rate.
Right. But there's no political will to do that. So that's why we are being presented with this option.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, too, about your polling numbers about removing Confederate statues from public spaces and renaming local schools. You find a slim majority is in favor of both.
Right. And these numbers really kind of fell off the map from when we asked about these last spring or summer. And I can't really necessarily directly attribute why there was much more support, other than the fact that there was in news a lot more and there was a lot more going on around race, at least nationally and in public. These numbers are down. But still, you know, you're at just over half. I think with the attention that DCPS is putting on renaming some schools and Confederate statues as well, you know, this is an issue that's not going away in the city, but clearly it divides us.
All right. One more data point or a couple more, and then we'll go to your calls with Mike Bender of UNF. The number to join us, 549-2937. You find both Mayor Lenny Curry and Sheriff Mike Williams are above water in approval. Curry at 48%, Mike Williams at 50%. The city council has 34% approval, not so good. And then let's cast ahead to the 2023 mayor's race. Democrat Donna Deegan, who ran unsuccessfully for Congress and, of course, is a former news anchor and marathon creator, she comes in at 19%, followed closely by Republican Matt Carlucci. Tell me a little bit more about what you see in these numbers, Mike.
Well, so quickly, the approval numbers, you know, Curry's at a net plus 5, which is pretty good for him considering the last year or two that he's gone through. And Mike Williams, even though he's only at 50%, with the amount of people that said they didn't really know, he was net positive 20 points, which is a really strong number. But for the mayoral race, and again, this is 2 years away.
Yeah.
I think the big reason we're asking about this is because so many candidates have raised so much money for this, and then clearly it's going to be an intense race. But these numbers are a clear indication of early name recognition. You know, Donna Deegan, obviously having literally been on the face of the news for a lot of years, and obviously what she's done with the Donna Marathon, and then, of course, the run for Congress last cycle, has her name out there, and people know who she is. Matt Carlucci, currently on city council, a long history in the city with the name Carlucci. He's pretty well known too. And those are the top two at this point. And again, this is so early, but I think it just gives you a little bit of a flavor of what the landscape might look like going forward.
Right. And she hasn't even indicated if she's running. Let's go to your calls now. We'll go in a moment to Mike Bender at 549-2937. Where do you stand on the gas tax? Here are lots of tweets for you, Mike, from Emily. I am for tax increases if we get a benefit from it. Better schools, better infrastructure, better social safety net. To me, taxes say we're all in this together. And when people want to cut them, it says to me, every man for himself. Another tweet, for a city that's proven allergic to tax increases or investing in neglected communities, this proposal offers a nearly once-in-a-lifetime chance to make some desperately needed improvements. We should take what we can get while we can get it. Let's explain what this money would do, Mike. The big thing is infrastructure across neighborhoods that really are woefully lacking in decent infrastructure. I mean, we're talking basics. for how some of this money will be spent. Sidewalks, streetlights. Those are the kinds of things that if you're living in a nice middle-class neighborhood, you take for granted. But a lot of people don't have decent sewage, decent sidewalks, decent streets. I would encourage anyone who's never been to some of these neighborhoods to just go take a drive through and see. You might be amazed at how run down many areas of town are. And so when you asked your poll respondents about this, did you ask a question about that, you know, or if they understood how the money would be used, or did you just ask if they were in favor or opposed?
So for the question, and it's hard, right, because we don't want to overwhelm the respondent with paragraphs and paragraphs of text. So we tried to limit it. So the question wording for the gas tax was, this legislation seeks to increase the local option gas tank, currently at 6 cents per gallon, to the amount allowed under federal law, which is 12 cents. The funds generated from this revenue stream will be used to fund transportation-related projects and expenditures. We did not specifically say it is going to this particular neighborhood, because honestly, in the legislation that's being discussed, that's not specifically outlined. Yes, it's been said this money will be sent here, but I mean, people that are skeptical could look back in this city's history and say, you've been saying you're going to spend money here for 60 years and haven't. So there's that part of it too. And then for the other aspects of it, particularly for the Skyway and the septic tanks. For the septic tanks, we said this legislation increases the current amount of money by $100 million slated for septic tank phase-out projects. Funding will be made possible through freed-up general fund capacity upon enactment of the local option gas tax, which will support the city's planned infrastructure project. So we've tried to be pretty clear in drawing connections to this tax will allow for this to occur.
549-2937. Give us a call. Elizabeth is along I-95 right now. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I am in favor of increasing the gas tax. The city has so many needs, roads, sidewalks, and we're always trying to do everything on the cheap. It's very frustrating. So I think we ought to, city council ought to do their job and pass it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. You know, these city council members are going to be hearing from their constituents, Mike, as they go through this process. But what about her comment that this is a town with a long history, as she said, of not really being willing to invest in itself, of trying to do things on the cheap. And then when the bill comes due, as it is now, there are limited options for how to pay for everything that's needed.
Yeah, that's been Jacksonville's story for a very long time. But, you know, you can point to pieces in history where we have been on board with raising taxes, and you don't have to look that far in the past, right? Just back in November, we passed a half-cent sales tax increase for schools. And if you want to go back further, Better Jacksonville plan was funded for a good long while. So there are points where you can say, hey, we've passed tax increases for certain things. But no, the story's true. We have generally a very low tax rate. And because of that, that does enable the city to do a lot of things.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the city council could advocate a raise in the millage rate. Basically, people would pay a little more in property taxes. But for many years, they've resisted taking that step. Our millage rate is much lower than other large Florida cities.
Yeah, and the Civic Council has come out with a couple of studies that have indicated when you start adding in all of the other fees and things that aren't specifically millage, we're still toward the bottom of Florida cities. And Florida in itself tends to be a pretty low tax rate state.
Lots of comments on our Facebook page. People have a lot to say here. Here's one from Duke. Duval County residents are for better roads. They are not for any money going to a Skyway-type endeavor. This is a bait-and-switch tax. Call it transportation and everyone will support it, then use the money for a project that would not garner a single vote. So it will be interesting to see, Mike, if they significantly scale back the money that JTA is asking for to convert the Skyway into what are known as autonomous vehicles or driverless cars. That's the current proposal.
Right. I think that the Skyway proposal being a large chunk of this money was politically a pretty big mistake. I think it's quite clear that the city, by and large, doesn't use the Skyway, doesn't think the Skyway was a success. And because of that, they say, why am I going to give you, you know, a buck every time I fill up the tank for something that is an eyesore that I'm never going to use? So it makes perfect sense why somebody's going to be opposed to it based on that.
It's 549-2937. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Mike Binder of UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. New polling from Mike's group shows that nearly 60% of you are opposed to raising the local gas tax, but let us know your thoughts here on the show now. 549-2937, CJ in Mandarin. Hi, CJ. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to see this proposal for a tax go to a referendum. I do think the people should decide, especially with the poll numbers. It's not likely to pass, unfortunately. So that does leave, if it doesn't pass, that does leave us with the question of how do we solve this infrastructure problem? And it is a problem. I think really the biggest problem to me would be the septic tank problem, you know, especially because we're trying to do all this downtown development, and we should take care of our river. It is a natural asset, but our river is sick. And the reason we know why, and that's because there are thousands and thousands of leaky and aged and old septic tanks. And I believe the state has allocated funds. We just need to try to, we really should try to see what happens with this national infrastructure bill. And I'm so disappointed in our Congressman Rutherford, between not to mention that he still supports the big lie. But also, he is completely fighting tooth and nail against this infrastructure bill. Mm. What he should be doing is fighting for funds for Jacksonville to go towards septic tank. I know that the Biden administration is very pro-environment, and I would think that they would have a willing participant to be able to allocate
CJ.
Funds to Jacksonville. Thank you so much.
Alrighty. Okay. Mike Binder, lots of comments from CJ. Let's begin with the first point he made, that he'd like to see this go to a referendum. Some city council members have called for that. They face quite a bit of criticism for doing that because, of course, their most basic function is to decide on matters of taxation.
Sure. But on the flip side, there was, you know, a push to have the half-cent sales tax for education go to a referendum as well. So I think people that are pushing for a referendum are seeing that. Now, yes, the city council, but what happens if city council votes this down? It says no, which is a very, very real possibility. Then suddenly a referendum looks like, okay, we at least have a chance down the line.
If they vote it down, which, as you say, is possible, we will once again see what we've seen for decades in this city languishing. Projects that need to get done just get kicked down the road another decade or more. I mean, that honestly is what is likely to happen if they don't approve this tax.
Yeah, I think that's very true. But the one part about this that I think is worth understanding is you talked about, you know, certain parts of the city have been woefully neglected, impoverished, really, really bad shape. It's not the bulk of the city. There's small sections, and there are small sections that a lot of people never, ever go to. So they drive around their neighborhood, and for the last, you know, 16 months, it's literally been their neighborhood. And they see things as fine, and that's okay for them, and they're content. So that plays into this as well.
That's always been a problem of this far-flung area, getting voters in the suburbs to want to pay for improvements in a part of the city that they have no attachment to.
And that's been downtown's problem, too. A lot of people don't go downtown ever. Maybe they'll go for a Jaguars game. Maybe they'll go for a concert. But that's it. Once you take out the people that work and, you know, so few people live downtown, you know, there's not a lot of folks that really spend a lot of time down there. And because of that, you tend not to see a lot of support for big investments of infrastructure down there.
Chris tweets the show, great cities have strong infrastructure and invest in themselves. Our communities should fill the promises of consolidation and ensure all neighborhoods have what they need to enhance economic development and quality of life, he says. All right, let's take one more call. It's Greg in Orange Park. Hey, Greg, you're not a Duval County voter, but let's hear your views.
Actually, I am a Duval County voter.
Oh, you are?
In Orange Park today.
Okay. What are your thoughts?
I'll start off. I'm a diehard Republican, but I believe no matter what side of the rail these guys fall in the city council or leadership of Jacksonville, we need to get rid of them because the problem has been in Jacksonville for far too long. I raised a family in Jacksonville. What Jacksonville needs to do is bring in people to Jacksonville. We have a very beautiful city. We're not a Colorado where we have big mountains, but we're the river city. Throughout raising my children, if we didn't take them to a flea market somewhere or to the zoo or to Mosh, there's not a lot to do in Jacksonville. Why can't the city planners hire a few people that can like create things for families to do on the weekends that are fun? Because when I was growing up and raising my kids, after you've done the few things in Jacksonville that there is to do, you go home and you watch what other cities are doing on TV.
Well,
like
Those cities invested. They blended together
those
public and private dollars to create the kind of attractions you're talking about.
Sure, we could be doing things on the river that brings people into downtown. We do nothing.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. And not to cut you off, it's just that we're almost out of time. Okay.
Sure.
So thank you, Greg, for that. And certainly his frustrations are, we've heard those many times from people in this city. Mike, people want a better city. They want better infrastructure. They want better attractions. The problem, of course, is always convincing them that their tax dollars will be spent wisely. So what are your final thoughts about your poll?
I think it's always a battle to convince people to raise taxes. But if there is a tangible benefit that people view as a positive, then I think you can absolutely get support. We've seen that here in Jacksonville. The trick is, what is that tangible benefit, right? Infrastructure, sidewalks. You know, if it's not in my neighborhood, I'm not going to benefit from that. And that's a hard sell. So you need to think about, hey, this is exactly what this money is going to go for. And if it's unpopular, i.e. the Skyway, you're not going to see support for it. But if it is popular, like the septic tanks or something of that nature, or the Emerald Trail, you're much likely to see more support for those types of things.
Always great to have you on. He's Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Have a great day.
And much more still ahead later in the hour. Get hired this week. If you're looking for work, we'll tell you about a virtual job fair that you should attend. But up next.
The plastics industry has really spent a lot of time and money on making us feel, as long as we put it in our bin, that it's going to be turned into another item.
You throw a lot of stuff in that recycle bin, but have you wondered if it's really getting recycled? Next, we speak with the author of the new book, Can I Recycle This? We'll be right back. Well, if you're like me, you put a lot of stuff into your recycling bin every week, but wonder if it's really getting recycled. Turns out a whole lot of it isn't. So how can we do a better job at this recycling? And why do we need to use less single-use products in general so that we recycle less stuff overall? In today's Going Green, I speak with author Jenny Romer about her new book, Can I Recycle This? Take a listen. Hi, Jenny. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I can't tell you how interested I am to ask you many questions about your book, Can I Recycle This? Because this is a question that so many people have, including me. So many times when I take trash out to the recycling bin, I wonder, is this really all getting recycled? Am I putting things in that I shouldn't? And that's a pretty common question people have, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I have so many friends and colleagues that have asked me about it over the years that I thought that it would be a really good subject for a book and an approachable way to start talking about how recycling works and how to reduce single-use plastic.
What are the biggest misconceptions that we all have about recycling? What are we doing wrong?
Well, I wouldn't blame yourself very much. A lot of it is the plastics industry has really spent a lot of time and money on making us feel good about recycling, particularly recycling plastic, and making us feel that as long as we put it in our bin, that it's going to be turned into another item. But a lot of the time, that's really not the case. So in my book, I look at whether something is collected in the majority of jurisdictions, whether it's sorted by existing machinery, recycling machinery, and whether it's likely to be turned into another item. And for that, I look at whether that material is valuable on the commodities market. And so really want people to think about not just whether their local jurisdiction accepts a particular item or not, but whether that's going to be ultimately be turned into something else.
You even have a cheat sheet associated with your book, Can I Recycle This? And it lists common household items that you can recycle and that you can't. This is really helpful. I'm looking at this PDF right now as we talk. There are things that I've put in the recycle bin that are not recyclable, like plastic straws, plastic utensils, cans, like a cocktail peanut can. None of that. There's so many things that people are putting in that aren't getting recycled. And I've been just as guilty of it as anybody. So I would recommend everybody get this cheat sheet and get your book. But this is a problem because this is wish cycling, isn't it? You put things in and hope they get recycled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of us will really like the idea that as long as we are putting something in the recycling bin, it's kind of like we didn't use it. It's getting turned into something else. But that's not the case, particularly with things like utensils. There are two problems there. One, they are kind of awkwardly shaped and have a hard time making it through all the machinery at recycling facilities. And even if they do end up making it through and being put into a bale, then they're made out of a plastic resin that manufacturers don't want to buy. It's generally a No. 6 polystyrene plastic resin. And so, this all sounds a little bit complicated, but in my book, it's an illustrated book, and I try to just give people a perspective on what to think about when they're putting something in their bin, all the different factors that might come into play. And with wish cycling, it's particularly important with some items, like plastic bags are considered tanglers. Those are going to actually cause more harm at the recycling facility, like getting tangled into the machinery. Another thing that's a wish cycling thing you definitely want to avoid is lithium-ion batteries, so rechargeable batteries.
Mm.
And those can cause explosions and fires at recycling facilities, so much so that some facilities are having a hard time even getting insurance. So definitely avoid recycling your rechargeable batteries.
And you write as well that even if you are careful and you sort your recyclables, that you can still be contributing to the overall problem of climate change and other environmental impacts. Why is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, the mantra really is reduce, reuse, recycle. And a lot of people really just think about that last part, the recycle part. And so I put a lot more emphasis on reduction and reuse. So doing things like bringing your own bag or bringing your own water bottle to try to avoid consuming the materials, especially consuming plastic, in the first place rather than just concentrating on the back end of the recycling part.
Yeah, common sense. Okay, so the greenwashing, that's something else that has become a buzzword that you write about. Marketing a product that's better for the environment when it actually isn't.
Mm-hmm.
How big of a problem is that in this space?
That's a huge problem. And even, the marketing of certain plastics as recyclable when they're not actually recyclable is a huge problem, and that's a big part of greenwashing right now. Or things like a little coffee pod that is claimed to be recyclable, but, you know, that's another thing that has a hard time making it through the recycling machinery. But companies know that if they put a recyclable claim on their products, then people feel a whole lot more comfortable using them. Also terms like biodegradable or compostable. Be cautious that my book gets into a little bit about how all these things really work to make consumers a little bit more cautious when they're buying these products. And hopefully, you know, I want people to, you know, use this when they're sorting their recycling. And I do have a caveat, please follow your local rules. Mm-hmm. And if your jurisdiction wants something, give it to them. But also making choices when you're at the store to buy products that have packaging that's more recyclable and sustainable, or avoid that packaging whenever you can, like buy things from bulk bins. But one other take home is that right now, a lot of the time, we really don't have those choices. And so pushing for policy, you know, I'm a lawyer, I work on policy, pushing for policies that really make the manufacturers or make the manufacturers responsible for the cost of recycling and disposing of their packaging. And if we see that, then I think we'll see a huge shift to packaging that's really, truly recyclable, and even towards more reuse and refill models. Like, I'd like to be able to walk into a store and buy my beer or soda in a refillable bottle rather than a recyclable bottle. And I'd like to see, that's the future I want to see. And I think we can get there.
The overall goal is to just, we need to break our addiction to single-use plastics, which is so hard for us Americans to do, and get closer to what is known as a zero-waste lifestyle. You know, I'll give you just one example. If I go through a drive-thru, you know, and I order a drink, an iced tea or a soda, they're not going to give me that drink in my own cup. So I accept the plastic cup, and then I recycle it when I could have made the choice not to take that plastic cup at all. But our built environment and our addiction to convenience foods is set up so that even without thinking about it, we keep consuming plastics that we don't really need. It's harder to break those habits than it seems.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're not set up well right now, but I think having, like I said, having policy that encourages businesses and companies to really invest in reuse and refill systems so that we can avoid getting that single-use plastic in the first place. And I'm a lawyer with the Surfrider Foundation. We have an ocean-friendly restaurants program where we really help restaurants with being more sustainable and at least avoiding the things like plastic bags and foam foodware cups and having straws upon request. So, you know, those are the things we know work now, but we really need to look beyond that. And even, you know, there's a movement towards having reusable containers for your takeout food and your cups. And so that's another place where we can go relatively easily, but then ultimately getting to all that packaged goods that we see on the grocery store shelves.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So I really recommend that people pick up your book. She is lawyer, environmental activist, and author Jenny Romer. The book is Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Jenny, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Well, we all like free stuff, right? Guess what? Lutheran Social Services is giving out a lot of it today. Vaccines, groceries, health screenings, lots of goodies. Bill Brim is the president and CEO at LSS, and he's on the line. Hey, Bill. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Yes, we do have a lot going on today.
You sure do. So let's begin with the vaccination program you have happening. What's going on at your organization? It's over on Phillips Highway.
4615 Phillips Highway, right down on the opposite side of Walmart on Phillips Highway, if you're going towards Bay Meadows. So FEMA is here on site. They will start at 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. tonight, and they're doing the second dose of Pfizer shots. So if you got your shot anywhere else in the city and you're looking for the second shot of Pfizer, you can actually get that done today. And also, they're going to be administering the Johnson & Johnson shot. So for all those folks out there that have not gotten their shots, I really strongly suggest that you come and get your J&J shot, Johnson & Johnson, and we can make our community a better place and safer.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. Also, we have Ascension, St. Vincent's Mobile Unit. It's like a rolling doctor's office on wheels. They're going to be here today from 8:30 to 12. So for high blood pressure, glucose, total cholesterol, and they're going to be doing appointments for free primary care in June. So they're able to write scripts, and this is for low-income people. So, and you can find more information on our website at www.lss, stands for Lutheran Social Services, JAX, JAX.org. So the neat thing is they're coming back on a monthly basis, and they'll be here. We don't have their schedule yet, so we will be posting it on our website. Our market, our food pantry, will be open from 10 to 12 today, so you're getting a lot, like $60 worth of food, of value in food. And Vision is Priceless also, which does free vision screenings for underneath the 200% poverty level, which is not hard for a lot of people. They're going to be in our lobby today from 9 to 12 today. And also, if you need a job, we're going to have our Steps to Success program, which is career and financial coaching. So it's a $1,500 value. And on average, our clients come out of, once they graduate out of this program or go through this program, the clients actually increase their credit score by 50 points and their net income by almost $1,000 a month.
Man, so, I can't believe you even have time to talk to me. This is what they're doing at Lutheran Social Service today. Free vaccines,
yeah,
free health screenings, free vision screenings, free food, and free career coaching, all in one place.
And a doctor's on wheels. So, and also, this coming Friday, we will have a mobile food pantry on site. So it's every third Friday from 10 until 12 also, and we'll serve up to 400 households. And that's a mobile food pantry that you get more fresh items like produce. Sometimes they have they'll have meat or seafood. Sometimes they have some delicious stuff. So it's a really neat event. You just have to show up. It's a drive-through mobile food pantry to keep everybody safe. If you want to volunteer or if you want to monetarily donate, it's, you know, we always need volunteers to be here. So again, on average, our food programs serve over 6,000 individuals each month. So we do a backpack program. We go out to
How's it been in the last year? Have you seen the demand shoot up for food?
Oh, gosh. We last year saw a 150% increase in food insecurity. So we actually served 39,000 unduplicated people. So it just does show you the great need is still in our community and exists today. So, yes, more than ever.
Wow. So if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Bill Brim, President and CEO of Lutheran Social Services. As he mentioned, they are located at 4615 Phillips Highway, just across from the big Walmart there. And if you swing by today, you can get a free second Pfizer vaccine or a one shot of the J&J vaccine. Go by and get your shot there. They also have free health screenings, vision screenings set up. Ascension St. Vincent's is on site with a mobile unit. Free food giveaways there today and free career coaching. You know, Bill, I don't know if you know this, but I used to serve on the board of LSS and I'm aware of all the programs that you guys do. You really do amazing work in this community. You also do refugee resettlement. You guys do a lot of great work in this community. And for those that aren't familiar with you, today's a good day for people to, as you said, stop by, see what's happening, maybe volunteer.
Exactly. And it's neat that you have all these services. And what we try to do is gather all these services so it's a one-stop shop for people that, you know, are in need of these services. And again, if you've gotten your second Pfizer, if you're looking to get your second Pfizer vaccine, you can anywhere that you've got it or anywhere that you did not get the second shot, you can come here and get it today. So that's the great thing, too. So,
and the one shot is a great option because for people that don't want to come back for a second vaccine, they can come and get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at your organization. If they need to use your mobile pantry, they can. You give out food at the mobile pantry, your weekday market. You give out food all of the time. So today is sort of a special event, yes?
Exactly. We are open 5 days a week for anybody in need. You pull up, you get out of your car, and you just give them a little bit of information, and actually somebody will take a cart of groceries out to your car just like you're at Publix. So it's a neat shopping experience for everybody. And a lot of times we have free extra items for people to choose from on the table. So there might be vitamins. There could be, you know, sometimes we have diapers, dog food, and different things like that, depending on what has been donated. So
also, they're offering HIV screenings and vision screenings. So if you don't have health insurance, this is a great opportunity to come and take advantage of these free health screenings. These are for low-income and uninsured people. Again, it's Lutheran Social Services, a slew of free services available today. Come by. They are located at 4615 Phillips Highway across from Walmart. If you need any of these services, get over there any way you can. Bill Brim is president and CEO at LSS, more at lssjax.org. Bill, thanks for all you do. I know it's a busy day for you, so I'm sure you'll have a lot of folks stopping by.
Well, thank you again, Melissa, for your support and all of the community support throughout this past year. It's just been overwhelming, so we greatly appreciate being able to be here and being able to serve our community. So,
yeah, the need is great. Consider a donation, too, to Lutheran Social Services. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
There's a lot of need out there. If you're one of those people looking for work, keep listening. After the break, we are going to tell you about this week's big job fair sponsored by CareerSource. That's after this.
JEA has proudly served Northeast Florida for over 100 years by volunteering in our local schools and neighborhoods in support of the causes our customers care about. Because we're committed to this community we all call home. More information at domorewithjea.com. CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at cnshealthcare.com.
I'm Robin Young. Irvin Staub's life was saved by his nanny during the Holocaust. He then studied genocides.
Most people remain either passive or support the perpetrators.
Well, now he teaches police departments how to become the one who intervenes, who says stop. Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Thank you. On the next Fresh Air, Seth Rogen talks about his new memoir, which he describes as being about his grandparents, bar mitzvahs, Jewish summer camp, and more stories about doing drugs than his mother would like. He says things about other famous people he's sure will create an awkward conversation at a party one day. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9. Hey!
No matter how ruthless you try to be when throwing things out, there's always at least one piece of clothing you can't bear to let go.
It has this beautiful red and blue print on it. It's just a wrap skirt, and I'm never going to get rid of it.
What we wear says a lot about who we are. We'll share your stories and explore why we give some items special meaning next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. A big job fair is coming up in town this Thursday. It's virtual. You need to log on to it and register in advance. Here's the deal. Lots of jobs will be available. For more, I spoke with Melissa Terbruggen, Regional Director at CareerSource Northeast Florida. Hi, Melissa. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
This is good news, a virtual job fair, and you're giving some special time for recent high school graduates off the top. Tell us what's happening.
Absolutely. On Thursday, May 20th, we're hosting a virtual job fair on our virtual job fair platform. We're looking to host job seekers from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with a special focus from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on recent high school graduates. Of course, they can continue on through the rest of the fair, but we want to specially set aside that 10 to 11 a.m. just for them. The event's open to all job seekers. So at 11 a.m., we encourage all job seekers looking for work to definitely attend and, of course, make sure they're registered before they do.
Right, and they can register at CareerSourceNortheastFlorida.com. We'll mention that again in a minute. You've got companies from all over town represented, Fanatics, FIS Global, Gate Petroleum, Sawgrass Marriott, and many others. So this isn't just for high school graduates. You want everyone who needs a job to check this out, right?
Absolutely. Right now, there are the employer need is great. We are currently up to 114 companies looking to connect with job seekers. So we're looking for anyone and everyone who's looking for work to attend this event. The high school graduates, the timing is perfect to focus on them. But companies are looking to fill their much-needed openings, and we're looking to connect anyone looking for work with those opportunities.
So let's talk about that a little more. What are you hearing from companies? As the economy is coming back and people are getting vaccinated, that's all great stuff. But employers are struggling to get people into jobs. What are they telling you?
They're telling us that they're just not getting enough applicants to choose from, that they're having positions that are remaining unfilled. They're trying to find new ideas and tactics in order to not only attract those individuals but retain them. There are some things that are happening around our region and throughout the entire nation that employers can do to kind of focus on those job seekers and make sure that they're attracting them to the jobs, including salary increases and things like that.
Sure. A lot of fast food places, for example, they're paying up to $15 an hour. What are some other creative ways companies are trying to entice people to come join them that you're hearing about?
And just to reinforce the $15 an hour, not only are they paying that, but the advertising has increased. Road signs. So it's not only the virtual ads, but they're doing a lot of grassroots marketing for those positions to get the job seekers just commuting on their daily trip to work or school. In addition to that, we're seeing lots of employers bringing on sign-on bonuses for job seekers, especially in some of our high-need industries. So whether that's $1,000 one-time or $100 for your first few paychecks, we're definitely seeing an increase in sign-on bonuses in order to be able to attract those job seekers.
So this is virtual. It's not like you can show up at a convention hall in suit and tie or nice dress and hand out your resume. So if you could, give some tips to people who are going to be job hunting virtually through this platform, how that works and any advice you might have for them.
Well, what we would encourage them to do, besides registering early, so all of that that necessary, those things, registering and making sure your resume is uploaded, those things are done and out of the way. So when the event starts, they're ready to go. So registering early. We encourage them to watch the informational videos that are available just so they can kind of understand the flow of the event to make sure that they do have that resume available and that it's uploaded. And to be ready to be engaged, we encourage all employers that are participating to be present at the event virtually. So if a job seeker goes into a booth and they see something that might be a good fit for them, they're able to connect with the employers through chat and ask any questions they might have. So make sure that they're, you know, in a good place to engage in this event, that they're focused, that they've uploaded their resume, and that they're just basically ready to connect to employers.
Again, this is Career Source Northeast Florida's virtual job fair coming up Thursday, May 20th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The first hour is reserved for high school graduates. But if you are past that point in your life, you can still take part in this. You need to pre-register, as Melissa said, and watch the informational video. Go to CareerSourceNortheastFlorida.com. Pre-register for this upcoming virtual job fair. And it's educational too, Melissa. You guys have resources for people that need help with interviewing skills, resume writing, and more. Can you tell us quickly about that too?
We do. We have opened this event up not only to businesses hiring, but also educational institutions, especially for those who are graduating who might not have decided what they can do. But we do have some resources available for them. And I'd also like to mention that we have a booth available that can assist high school seniors who have questions about the FAFSA application. So, of course, that's something that seniors, a process that they go through. But if they haven't completed that, then we'll have resources available to help them with that as well. So resources for high school seniors looking for work, looking for educational opportunities, and, of course, resources for anyone looking for additional skills and things that they might need in order to be more successful in the workforce.
Check it out at CareerSourceNortheastFlorida.com. She's Melissa Terbergen, Regional Director there. Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.